This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. foreign and national security priorities and challenges in 2018. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you as we do every year at this time from the campus of Georgetown University right here in Washington, D.C. It's been about 1 year since the inauguration of former reality TV star and real estate mogul Donald J. Trump as U.S. president. The substantive and stylistic ramifications of his upset victory over Democrat Hillary Clinton continue to roil domestic and international politics. His America First mantra has translated into the trashing of trade agreements like NAFTA, which is on life support, and the withdrawal from the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, designed to both diminish China's nefarious influence and bolster that of the United States and 11 Pacific Rim countries. The impact of Mr. Trump's campaign promise of, quote, America First, appears to be rendering the nation more protectionist and isolationist. By year's end, Mr. Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accord, denounced the nuclear deal with Iran, and broke with decades of American policy in the Middle East by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Analysts say that President Trump has truly transformed the world's view of the United States from an anchor of the international liberal order into something more inward-looking and unpredictable. His Twitter posts, delivered without warning or consultation, often contradict or at least complicate his administration's policies and subvert the messages his emissaries are trying to deliver abroad. However, Mr. Trump's supporters and some cabinet-level officials praise his blunt messages and disruptive style of governing. Well, with us to discuss the foreign policy and national security challenges for the Trump administration in 2018 are two distinguished analysts. Anthony Clark Arend is Professor of Government and Foreign Service and Senior Associate Dean at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Previously, he served as Director of the Master of Science in Foreign Service Program. And Mark Lagon, he's Chief Policy Officer at the Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, and that's a Washington-based nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the goals of the Global Fund. A scholar and former ambassador, Mark previously served as president of Freedom House. That's one of the oldest and most prestigious organizations dedicated to defending human rights around the globe. And both gentlemen join me here at the campus of Georgetown University. Welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Great to be with you.
Well, Tony Arend, let me begin with you to ask you how you would assess Mr. Trump's first year in office on the foreign policy front, and what do you think it portends for 2018?
This has been, in my view, one of the most remarkable and bizarre years in foreign policy in recent memory. I cannot think of any time during my life when we have seen circumstances playing themselves out the way they have. It's difficult to know where to begin, but I'll say this. My sense is that the Trump administration has called into question the fundamental pillars of post-World War II order, whether it's the security system, which is manifested in the United Nations and NATO and other such organizations, or the system of international trade, which we see reflected in the World Trade Organization and an organization such as NAFTA, whether it's reflected in environmental agreements. So fundamentally has this administration called into question all these institutions which have maintained peace and security since the end of World War II. We don't know where this is going to go. My sense is that while these institutions have been called into question, there's still a tension in the Trump administration. There's a tension between those who would see America retreat, pull back, not play a leadership role in these institutions, like seemingly the president himself, Jared Kushner, Stephen Miller, and others, and people like Rex Tillerson, Secretary James Mattis, McMaster, and others who seem to be more of a traditionalist approach. So while the administration is called into question all these pillars, there's still no certainty as to exactly which side of this particular battle is going to win.
Turning to you, Mark Lagon, I'd like you to beat that
Well, I think there are two trends, and I would sort of add to Tony's picture by suggesting that President Trump has taken the United States farther in two directions that it had been trending. First of all, a preference for unilateral action over multilateral action, going it alone, not joining the treaty to create the International Criminal Court, skepticism about the UN. And so President Trump has taken things even farther, even when it really seems to be shooting the United States' interests in the foot. The idea of pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership because, to use an American idiom, the Chinese are eating the lunch of the United States on trade has essentially handed to China an opportunity to shape multilateral trade affairs in the Pacific region. The other trend has been relying very heavily on the military instrument and the hard power side of foreign policy rather than the soft power side. I worked for George W. Bush. There might have been a little bit too much reliance and certainly a toughness on counterterrorism that was not as sensitive to basic norms of human rights as it might be, but there was an understanding that soft power really was important. For instance, the PEPFAR program on AIDS had that side. Now, the U.S. foreign policy is like a body with a big, brawny military arm and an increasingly scrawny side for soft power diplomacy assistance. It's not too late for American leadership, but we need to smell the coffee.
Well, let me pick up on something Mark said. He was referring to his tenure with the George W. Bush administration. And in addition to PEPFAR, George W. Bush, a Republican, also was very much a promoter of democracy around the world. So we have the so-called Bush Doctrine, and then the Obama Doctrine, one could characterize perhaps as a more of a retreat, not from the world stage, but, you know, removing U.S. troops from Iraq, trying to remove the irritants that bother many of our friends and allies. So, Tony Arend, how would you characterize the so-called Trump doctrine? Is there even a doctrine to characterize? And also the style we're seeing almost governing by tweets.
Well, I would not want to characterize the existence of a Trump doctrine yet. What I would want to note in response to what Mark said is I agree, is there tends to be historically a tension in American foreign policy between sort of pulling back and more interventionist, and you've tended to see that throughout history. Since World War II, while you've seen those movements, those trends, it's still been consistently generally within this bipartisan foreign policy framework. It's still been within the same framework. Now we seem to be casting the framework aside, and I don't think there is any kind of Trump doctrine. On the one hand, if you read, say, his United Nations speech, which he gave at the UN General Assembly, he used the word sovereign or sovereignty 23 times. Now, that tends to indicate this sort of nationalist pulling back, taking a little bit of what we saw during the Obama administration, but sort of taking it to a farther extreme. On the other hand, you see things like the intervention, the cruise missile attacks in Syria that came after the response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, sort of a quick use of force. Many people were very critical of the Obama administration for not doing that once the so-called red line was crossed. So on the one hand, this pulling back, this emphasis on sovereignty, but on the other hand, willing to act at least in a couple of circumstances. The problem I see is there's no coherence. There's no actual doctrine here. It is almost as though it is what happens to get the president's attention at the time. And I think this is what's reflected in the tweets. Now, obviously, social media is a relatively new event, but we have never seen a president conduct foreign policy or make foreign policy statements on the spur of the moment without any real staffing or any real support. And that, I think, has thrown both our allies and our adversaries into a tizzy because they don't see a coherence. They don't see a doctrine in the Trump administration.
Let me pick up on what Tony just said, turning back to you, Mark Lagon. Some analysts have characterized this style as somewhat transactional. It certainly isn't, as Tony said, reassuring to our allies. And the trend that we see of criticizing allies like the UK or Germany and others and complementing, one could say, our adversaries like Vladimir Putin, even though in the recent paper on the national security strategy that came out at the end of 2017, both Russia and China are identified as rivals or revisionist powers, and yet there's this discrepancy between words on the page by our administration and the actions of Mr. Trump.
Well, I think Tony is right that there isn't a coherence. Some people think it's reassuring that there are other elements of the administration's policy or its written statements that don't reflect the president's own personal pensions. I don't think that's reassuring because it's harder to predict where the United States would be. His background does explain quite a bit. President Trump has a preference to bilateral relationships because I think he thinks there's the most leverage when you're negotiating with someone like in a real estate deal. I don't think he appreciates the importance of multilateral arrangements or that there are some, like NATO or the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, that work really well even when some parts of the UN at some times are unaccountable. The other thing I would say is you mention criticism for allies, like for some reason telling the UK that it's handling its counterterrorism poorly and praising Putin and some adversaries. There's a third category, which is allies or partners of the United States on strategic issues, on counterterrorism, who Trump is hugging too tightly. I think he does not have open eyes about the leaders of Saudi Arabia, of Turkey, of the Philippines, who are very problematic on human rights, and it actually harms the credibility and influence of the United States.
We'll get into that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Tony Arendt. He's the Senior Associate Dean at the School of Foreign Service and Professor of Government and Foreign Service at Georgetown University. And Mark Lagon. He's Chief Policy Officer at the Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. And we're discussing national security and foreign policy challenges for the Trump administration in 2018. And we are coming to you from the campus of Georgetown University here in Washington. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out at the beginning of the new year to one of our most loyal listeners, Ray Ondoro in Nairobi, Kenya. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Tony Arendt, to discuss what Mark was talking about before we went to the break about how this administration is actually becoming closer to some of our allies who are problematic on the world stage with respect to human rights, democracy, women's rights, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, going in such an autocratic direction, a member of NATO. And as we speak, of course, we're witnessing protests breaking out in Iran, the likes of which we haven't even seen, even in 2009. What about this scenario and going forward with respect to the Trump administration?
Well, I think there are a couple different issues here. The one, and I'm not a psychologist, but I have to really try to make a psychological explanation. Why is Trump enamored with Putin or Duterte or Erdogan or the Saudi regime? And a lot of it seems to strike me is an appeal that he sees in decisive male autocrats, people who are able to get things done, in his mind, authoritarians. That seems to be a model that he finds himself admiring. And perhaps in self-reflection, he sees himself in that model as the successful businessman, the person that goes in, that makes the deal. And that leads to this very strange enamorment with these kinds of individuals. And I feel that it leads him to be in a position where he's being played by Vladimir Putin. He has had harsher words to say about Republicans, Jeff Sessions, about Democrats, about Angela Merkel, about Theresa May, about the cast of Hamilton. He's had harsher words to say about those folks than he has about Vladimir Putin. Now, what is this going to mean in terms of human rights? I really feel as though, really on his own, he will allow things to happen in the Philippines, in Turkey, and in Russia that should rightfully be criticized, and in Saudi Arabia. Now, in places where he has a different view, such as Iran or Pakistan, he has actually been able to say some useful things about the rights of individuals in those places. And I think that's a good thing. But this inconsistency, I don't think, is serving the United States very well. And as Mark said, is going to have a counter effect on what we're really trying to accomplish in promoting human rights and national security.
Well, speaking of that counter effect, Mark Lagon, that leads me to ask you, is Mr. Trump perhaps unwittingly or inadvertently empowering China and Russia? Are China and Russia now replacing the United States as the preeminent global power?
Well, it's important to note that American interest is bound up in offering a leadership role in the world. It's not altruism that has led the United States to act as a global leader and at times a guarantors of these sort of institutions of trade and peace and cooperation. And I think moving in the direction of America first as the watchwords of the Trump administration leaves the stage to Russia as a spoiler and China as the most substantial emerging power in the world. I'll give you an example. So China has been more and more influential in sub-Saharan Africa by investing, by offering loans, big infrastructure projects, saying we're not going to put any human rights conditionality on our assistance or investment for you. If the United States steps back rather than engaging, investing, assisting on public health, fighting AIDS and malaria, it's a mistake and it's ceding ground to those other powers. The United States can't take the place of civil society for fighting for liberal governance, but the United States standing on the right side and people knowing that it will be backing them as they try to make for a more reformed and free world is very important.
Turning back to you, Tony Arend, of course, while foreign policy and national security are primarily the province of the executive branch here in the United States, certainly the Congress plays a role, and domestic politics plays a role in formulating foreign policy for every president, but particularly many analysts say it seems there's an outsized role for domestic politics. We saw it at the end of the year when Mr. Trump decided to declare that Jerusalem was going to be the official capital of Israel, the evangelical base of Mr. Trump. They have been advocating this for a long time. So let's look at the nexus between domestic politics and foreign policy. What about the Russia probe, the probe into potential ties between members of the Trump campaign and Russia, and the very well-known and documented influence of Russia in our elections, and how we are going to try to combat that in the future?
Well, it's an interesting question. And I feel as though politics has so muddied the waters on the Russian probe that we're forgetting one of the most important things about that whole episode. And that is, Russia did, in fact, try to affect the election. Russia engaged in a variety of activities, from social media activities to cyber activities and so on. Russia is continuing to do this. One of the most important things we need to do as a nation is try to prevent it, try to stop it, so they don't have an impact on the elections of 2018 or the elections of 2020. And because this is so caught up in perceptions by the presidency that somebody is calling into question the efficacy of his election, he's not properly addressing this issue. Because people on both sides of the aisle are caught up in the politics of that, they're not properly addressing that issue. What I hope is that somewhere in the FBI, which has also been called into question by the president, there are individual agents who are operating quietly and effectively to counter Russian activities within our democratic system. This is something that in almost any other administration would be trumpeted as a major act of foreign intervention into a democracy. And it seems to be lost in everything that's going on in the politics.
Turning to you, Mark Lagon, for your take on this, to what extent you think the Russia probe will perhaps be an impediment or affect the Trump administration's ability to govern, particularly on the world stage? And does it concern you as well that Mr. Trump in particular, if not members of his administration, does not seem to be too concerned about Russia's interference and perhaps doesn't even quite necessarily recognize that they did interfere in our 2016 election?
Well, I think that one should be concerned about Russia's designs to kind of leverage its cleverness to use social media to spread fake news and to undercut the trust in Western institutions by citizens of those countries. I think it's important for the probe to get to the truth. It's also important not just for the special prosecutor and for the FBI to be left to do their job and given the trust that they are going to do that job without partisan bias, but the press needs to be respected as a source of shining sunlight on this. Mm-hmm. If this probe hamstrings the president's ability to pursue his policy, so be it. Although I do think ultimately the most healthy thing is for voters to speak out about their opinions on this, because it will be very important for the United States to look at this era and sort of cast its lot with the basic fundamental institutions the United States has relied on to date.
Well, turning back to you, Tony Arendt, in the few minutes we have left, there are certainly no shortage of major challenges for the United States, for the world. How would you characterize the biggest challenges that we're facing in 2018, and how would you advise the Trump administration going forward on them?
Well, I think there are two strategic challenges. One is Russia, and the other is China. And I think the Trump administration should take a much more realistic approach to Russia. Not that we should recreate the Cold War, but I think this romance with Putin needs to end. I think Russia needs to be called out. And I think Russia will actually respect being called out. Second is China. With the U.S. pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we have, as you noted earlier, given inroads to China in that region. I don't know how much we can repair, but I think the United States cannot cede Chinese leadership in that area. We need to play a prominent role, and I think we need to try to reassert ourselves. I said it may be too late for the TPP to come back together, but I think we need to move in a different direction. So those are sort of the two broad strategic challenges. The acute challenge is North Korea. The president needs to stop tweeting, needs to stop calling Kim Jong-un little rocket man. The United States needs to take a responsible position to North Korea. And frankly, and this is a bit controversial, we need to acknowledge that North Korea is a nuclear power. We can't say we're not going to come to the table unless you agree not to have nuclear weapons. They do. We need to come to the table as we are. We need to work together to have arms control, to have deterrence, but we need to acknowledge that fact.
Mark Lagon, you get the last word. The biggest challenges for foreign policy and national security in 2018 for the United States and the world?
Well, I think what's important is for the Trump administration not to take premises too far. So the notion that multilateral institutions are sometimes unaccountable and give an equal voice to governments that don't represent the consent of the governed compared to those that do, that's a real concern, but that doesn't mean you should throw away every refugee effort of the UN or even nimble other multilateral institutions. To say that the United States interests and larger ideals of peace, democracy, human rights, development are somehow mutually exclusive and that the United States has to have a cramped view, actually, these are intimately tied together.
I'm afraid on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests and hosts here at Georgetown University, Anthony Arendt. He's Senior Associate Dean at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, and Mark Lagon, Chief Policy Officer at the Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests and her production assistants. Our engineer and producer was Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.